All right, what's up, and welcome back for another episode of Cognizant and Cognizance, the podcast born out of recognizing the importance of the second stage of the mastery process, conscious incompetence. This is your host, Jim Perro, speaking, and every week I add a new chapter onto the anthological discussion on life, taking action, and the value of conscious thought. Join me and the occasional guest for a head-in-the-clouds perspective on how to stay grounded and win in all that you do. Enjoy!
Today's Daily Stoic entry, which is the last one that I will be recording
Trust me, real joy is a serious thing. Do you think someone can, in the charming expression, blithely dismiss death with an easy disposition, or swing open the door to poverty, keep pleasures in check, or meditate on the endurance of suffering? One who is comfortable with turning these thoughts over is truly full of joy, but hardly cheerful. It's exactly such a joy that I would wish for you to possess, for it will never run dry once you lay claim to its source. So we throw around the word joy casually. I'm overjoyed at the news. She's a joy to be around. This is a joyous occasion. But none of those examples really touches on true joy, not in this sense. Those are closer to cheer or cheerfulness than anything else, and cheerfulness is surface level. Joy, to Seneca, is a deep state of being. It's what we feel inside us and has little to do with smiles or laughing. So when people say the Stoics are dour or depressive, they're really missing the point. Who cares if someone is bubbly when times are good? What kind of accomplishment is that? But can you be fully content with your life? Can you bravely face what life has in store from one day to the next? Can you bounce back from every kind of adversity without losing your step? Can you be a source of strength and inspiration to others around you? That's Stoic joy. The joy that comes from purpose, excellence, and duty. It's a serious thing. Far more serious than a simple smile or a chipper voice. Self-reflection and inspire a sense of purpose in you and in all that you do. And so I guess the question that it brings to mind is, are you really experiencing any joy? True joy, I think, is, like you said, it's just independent of the conditions, outside conditions anyway. It's independent of your life's occurrences. It's independent of your own personal situation. It's just true joy is satisfaction that persists through the efforts of the universe to diminish your satisfaction. I definitely have done this, I'm sure you have, overusing the word joy. You know, oh yeah, I'm having a great day, you know, this is a joyous day. Overuse of the word joy, I think, is akin to the overuse of the word awesome, but it's not as bad, not as egregious. Everybody's uses awesome in the wrong way. Somebody asked me how I'm doing. I'm awesome. Today's an awesome day. When in reality, saying that something's awesome in the true sense, in the true definition of the word, is saying that it's just this borderline inconceivable, unbelievable experience that has left you like at a complete loss for words, you know, something that's beyond your comprehension. And, you know, it's so incredibly unbelievable that it might even, you know, inspire fear. It's something that your brain can't even wrap around. And it's much deeper than, you know, how was your day? Oh, it was awesome, you know? And I think that the same sentiment goes along with the word joy, at least in the Stoic sense. And I think whereas most of us are characterizing joy as this, you know, this happy-go-lucky feeling, you know, you've got an extra skip in your step, you've got a smile on your face, you can hear it in someone's voice when they're having a joyous time, right? And I think in reality, it's this extreme form of happiness or pleasure. It's almost unmatchable that you get from nurturing this just like an overwhelmingly positive outlook on life. And most of us use it to describe Friday afternoons and, you know, I love avocados and all the, and I love both of those things too, but does that mean that other foods and, you know, a simpler meal or a typical day of the week can't inspire joy, or you can't find the joy in that? I think sometimes it's a little refreshing to maybe just eat a meal specifically for sustenance. I don't know. I personally don't really like eating a salad, so when I do eat a salad, I try to find the benefits of making a salad delicious, you know, add some almonds or just add a little something to an otherwise not necessarily unpleasant but not a happy experience in order to kind of see that silver lining and find happiness in something that doesn't normally inspire happiness. Another step that I've taken recently that has been really that's helped me do is really experience the true purpose of coffee other than taste. Because most of my life, black coffee is disgusting. You know, I gotta add sugar, maybe a little cream instead of the sugar, whatever the case may be. But the true purpose of coffee, other than taste, is to wake yourself up. You know, to be attentive to the world around you in a time when you're not normally as attentive as you could be. And so I think the important piece with that is that there's so much more to life than the moments when you're supposed to feel happy. And the things that you try to do to get back to that happy place artificially most of the time, like sugar in your coffee or, you know, putting on a smile when you don't want to and just trying to seem chipper, you know, there's pain and there's suffering in everyone's lives, really. Everybody's lives has something unfortunate that's happened in it or will continue to happen in it. It doesn't matter, you know, whether you would want to admit that or not. Even the most positive people those are usually the people that have gone through the most shit and had the most unfortunate things happen, at least in my experience. And I'd say those that are most capable of absorbing lasting joy out of the universe, kind of eking it out, you know, to get blood from a stone, as the old little saying goes or whatever, you can't get blood from a stone. Well, the harder you try, the more you have a chance to get some out, right? And so those who are most capable of absorbing that joy from the universe are the ones who acknowledge the presence of that negativity and, you know, embrace the unfortunate circumstances and still come out on top and feeling satisfied and accomplished in their life, like they've done something. Now, me, personally, I don't have a hard life by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I have a pretty great life in comparison to the majority of the global population. That includes, you know, some of my friends, people that I know. I have a fairly easy life, aside from the challenges that I make for myself on a daily basis, which is a conversation for another time. But nonetheless, having a really easy life and being set up pretty well for success by my parents through my upbringing and just where I am in life, I run into my share of tough patches all the time, just like everyone does. More so in my earlier years, in the first half of my 20s, I had much more rough patches, or at least they seemed to be. There seemed to be significantly less space in between those rough patches. Losing my mom to cancer at 21, 3 years later, I had my own battle with cancer. And that's all in the first half of my 20s. It's kind of some traumatic shit, and it really doesn't seem fair. But, you know, looking back, at least up until the other day, and I'll tell you why, all I remember was being, you know, nervous and scared and unsure if I was going to survive through that whole process. But so the other day, actually a couple weeks ago, my dad brought a bunch of old stuff from my house, the one in Palmyra. He brought a bunch of, like, old crap that I never really cared to sort through up until he brought it to my doorstep. So I was finally sorting through the last of it a few days ago, like over the weekend, actually, I think Saturday morning, yeah. And excuse me. And so I came across a letter from 2014, late 2014, early 2015, and this is from when I was starting. And so I came across this letter that all the nurses at this cancer center wrote to me, and they gave it to me. They had been working on this letter and adding signatures from around the clinic for the entirety of my chemotherapy, which was about, I think it was about 8 or 9 months total. And so I did 3 rounds, and when I finally, the last day of my 3rd round of chemotherapy, I actually still had the picture that they took, all bald and no eyebrows and all that good stuff. On the way out, which was pretty cool. So when I finished my 3rd round of chemotherapy, they gave me this letter, and so I came across the envelope, and I instantly knew what the envelope was. And so I was like, okay, let's pull this out, let's read this, let's see how far I've come. And so as I'm reading it, I actually kind of brought a tear to my eye, because when I think back on that period of time, I remember all the negative feelings from that said, nervous and a little scared, unsure about what I was going to do. You know, maybe I should just give up now, things like that. Because, you know, those thoughts are bound to cross. They cross, you know, they cross people's minds all the time when they're just having a bad Tuesday, let alone going through that. And so that's what I remember. But the only thing that those ladies saw, at least based on what they wrote me in this letter, was just a young kid going through a shitty time in his life and doing whatever he needed to do to smile and make other people smile whenever possible. And so I guess to look back on that and realize that even then there was a recognition that, you know, happiness isn't just done for the sake of being happy. You know, there's a real true purpose in the pursuit of lasting happiness, which is to not only inspire others to find their own happiness, but to use it as a driving force to get through whatever challenges ahead of you, to find the happiness in those unhappy moments throughout a struggle is a really good tool to push you through that struggle. To be honest, I think philosophy for that, I think even just college in general for that, because that was really what turned me on to philosophical writings and teachings. And I think one of the earliest concepts that any reader of whether it's an outright philosophical work or a book that touches on any sort of existential philosophy, any reader of those kinds of works really learns to cope with the idea that we're all going to die someday. Now, whether you view that as a good or a bad thing is entirely up to you, and it's entirely influenced by where you start reading, who you start reading, and stuff like that. But I think it's inevitable to learn, or at least to be confronted with the idea of death as an inevitability, you know? And the way that I found was easiest to cope with that inevitability is, you know, something that's been talked about quite a bit over the course of this podcast, which is, you know, find the purpose in life despite the presence of death. And so at the time, I was really just starting to read some of the guys I've quoted in here, like Moral Letters from Seneca, which is where the passage was from today. I had just gotten my copy of Marcus Aurelius's Meditations at that point. But I was also reading like the German guys, like Immanuel Kant and Nietzsche, and even people like Locke and Machiavelli and Hobbes and Alexis de Tocqueville, people that are talking about more specifically like political philosophy and social organization, human nature and the apparatus of the state. And I think that stuff generally isn't really related to death on its face, but I think all of those different things kind of stirred up in the mental pot was not only confusing, which confusion causes you to either shut down or figure it out, but it was also kind of comforting, which is, you know, to know that, yeah, sure, we're all gonna die eventually, but through the nature of our own existence, we are predisposed with this inclination for death, right? The point of being alive is to eventually die. And so, in taking into account the shortness of life, another piece from Seneca, the shortness of life, allowing yourself to slip into an undesirable state of mind and stay there and not work on yourself, not, you know, be in pursuit of the highest good, virtue, and all that good jazz, is really truly a waste of the life we've been given. And to kind of synthesize that attitude from just ink on tiny slices of trees, you know, was really comforting and I think a motivational piece for me. And so I guess the important part is to find the motivation in those unhappy moments, you know, find that, for lack of a better term, silver lining, which is the biggest cliche in the world, but it plays on a real sentiment, which is that the happiest people in life are those who can find reasons to be happy in the face of perpetual unhappiness. And so with that, I remind you that happiness is not just for eating avocados and Fridays when you get out of work early. Happiness is for, you know, rainy days. Happiness is for foolish decisions and living with the consequences. Happiness is for everybody all the time. All you need to do is go out and find it. So with that, I'm going to close up this week. Next entry will come sometime later this week. Tomorrow's the last day of July. And then the month of August begins on Thursday. The month of August is centered on pragmatism, which is not the most exciting thing in the world. It's much more difficult than kind of letting your idealistic side run wild, but it's also much more useful in almost every sense of the word useful. So the month of August, I'll probably bring that to you during the day on Thursday, is on pragmatism. And with that, I've been